So now I can answer questions.
You proposed a couple of sort of payment models for artists, sort of donation or popularity based. In terms of people write software for
these methods don't work for software, and here's why. Software needs to be free, and with free software you may often have thousands of contributors to one program, and it's completely impossible to work out how to divide money among them.
So in your view, is it possible that under that framework for someone to make a living from writing software?
Well, there are people already paid to write free software. You don't need those to make that possible. And it's not that important a question anyway. Non-free software is an attack on society. So I hold with the principle that we should try to reward activities that benefit society and try to punish and discourage activities that harm society. Developing free software benefits society, so it's good to look for ways to reward that. Developing proprietary software is an attack on society, and we should look for ways to try to discourage that. I don't propose to ban it outright, because that would be too big a change, and society is clearly not ready for anything like that, at least not this decade, maybe someday. In any case, when that question is raised, it's often in the context of an implicit assumption, which is, the implicit assumption sounds like developing software is good. We need more software development. If we can get more software development, well, can we get more software development if it's free, or do we have to let it be proprietary? I mention this implicit assumption because I disagree with it. I'd like to have as much free software as possible and as little non-free software as we can't manage to get rid of.
I don't think that's the direction I was actually coming out from. More I was coming out from the direction of I'm a software developer, and I'd like to make a living doing that. So.
Well, the thing is, there's nothing wrong a priori with wanting to make money by developing software, but it may be unethical. If the software you develop is non-free, then it's an unethical activity. And the person who says, well, I'm doing non-free software because I want to make income from software and I only see this way, is like the person saying, well, I'm getting an income by stealing things and selling them. He's got no right to do that at all.
Okay, so if I was to satisfy the requirements of being ethical by releasing software as free software, what kind of model would you use?
Well, there are a few, but that's a secondary issue. I'm not going to say that you'll always find a way that to make some money by developing free software. Let's suppose you don't. There are such jobs, but there are not millions of them, so maybe you can't find one. In that case, what should you do? Well, you shouldn't develop proprietary software. That's evil. So what should you do? Well, you could look for some other kind of job. Now, as it happens, most programming jobs are development of custom software. And you can do that business and make the software free as long as you just give it to the client under a free software license. The client still is going to have to pay, because nobody's going to write that program for him without getting paid. So there's no fundamental difficulty to doing that business and delivering the software as free software. In fact, if the client isn't really stupid, he's really foolish, he'll insist on getting it as free software. He'll say, look, I'm paying for this. I want to be free to use it. I don't want to have you controlling me after I paid you to write this stuff for me. And since that's most of the paid programming anyway, there's no fundamental difficulty. You know, if society all moved to free software, most of the programming jobs would still be there and they'd be the same programming jobs as they are now. But if it turns out that you don't find a way to get paid to develop free software, what should you do? Well, you shouldn't develop non-free software because that's unethical, so you should do something else. And if you are unemployed, you're in the same boat with millions of other people. And they can't argue that because they're unemployed, they should steal cars and sell them. There are certain unethical things you just shouldn't do. Stealing food is legitimate if there's enough food for everybody and they just won't let you have any. But that's a narrow exception. for the most part, stealing things is just wrong. I can't understand the sounds you are saying.
I do beg your pardon.
I have hearing problem, which is, my problem is recognizing consonants. So you need to pronounce them carefully for me to hear you.
I will do my best. I wonder if there's ever any room for moral ambiguity in your feeling. I'm thinking of the case around, say, smart meters, which there's a big push by governments and electricity companies.
I know about that. Right. Well, let me respond, since I know what the issue is for me. Smart meters could be implemented in a way that is perfectly fine. But I think they're being implemented in a way that adds to surveillance of the electricity customers, and therefore they need to be fixed. They need to be fixed so that there's a limit to how many times per month they can read the total usage out of the meter remotely. If they could only read it four times a month, that would be enough for all real events of when they need to, when their new subscribers moving in and so on. Yes, occasionally they need to read the meter, but they won't need to read it more than four times a month. And that limit will prevent it from being used for any annoying surveillance, so that would be fine.
But they're talking about developing the technology to the point where you'll have an intelligent grid that brings power online when it's needed, because the smart meters are telling it that it's needed. That's why it's saying that.
Well, the thing is, the smart meters can't tell it anything it can't tell now. I mean, they can tell what the electrical demand is in any particular part of the system. You can turn on a device at any time. There's no way a smart meter can always know that. It might know it sometimes, but it won't know it all the time. So I don't think they need that.
I think they do. I mean, the low voltage network doesn't have meters if they live in the house. They don't know what's happening on it.
They don't need to know at the level of one house.
They might need to know what's going on at the 400 volt level, for example.
I'm sorry, why can't they just measure the current going into each sub-network of that type? What good is it for them to measure it at the level of the house if everything in the house were running on some pre-plan and could send that pre-plan to the electric grid? Yes, then they could determine in advance how much power they're going to need at every time. But that's impossible as long as there are people there who turn things on and off whenever they feel like it, and without having announced in advance when they were going to do so. And given that, they can't determine anything more from smart meters than they can determine from statistics, general statistics that they have already, plus measuring pieces of the grid. So I think that this is bogus. I think that they're over-optimizing something that won't give them so much, and the cost of that over-optimization could be tremendous, and not just in money, but in our freedom.
I had seen a documentary a few years ago which was talking about not free software, but it was talking about the patents on what they call biopiracy.
This is a totally unrelated issue. But the concept of biopiracy results from a fundamental mistake. The thinking behind that is everything is going to be owned, and therefore, if a corporation visits a jungle and finds a plant that makes a useful substance, of course that's going to be owned by somebody, and therefore the people who live around there should get a piece of the action. Well, I reject the premise. I don't think that patents on pharmaceuticals, which is what this is really about, should ever be imposed on poor countries at all. This is one of the reasons why the World Trade Organization must be destroyed. So if you accept that evil, then you might say, well, we demand that the poor people who live in near the jungle where this thing was found get paid something, because let's say that they own that find. But that's ridiculous. That means a certain group of poor people will get some money, but what about all the other poor people in other countries where who can't afford to buy that medicine? So that's not a solution. Patents on pharmaceuticals or anything related to medicine should be limited to wealthy countries, which can cope with them.
I'm interested in the uses of the Freedom Box. Could you tell me whether or not there are any risks? How can we guarantee that?
Well, you can't guarantee anything in computing. That's, forget that. But I see no reason why there would be any particular risk. The big risk is from proprietary software. It's full of malicious features because the users are defenseless against the developer. The only known defense against malicious features in a program is for the users to have control over it. Practically speaking, we find that over and over again, widely used proprietary programs have malicious features. I just found out Spotify is another example. Well, that's nice to know. But it joins Windows, Mac OS, the iPhone, the iPad, Flash Player, the Swindle, cell phones. So the only defense is free software.
How confident are you that the hardware...
I can't hear you.
How confident are you that the hardware in your device, it has not been compromised?
I can't tell. That's a real problem. I just don't have any solution to offer for it. With software, I can offer a solution. Let's use software that we have control over. You know, in principle, the same solution could be used at the hardware level, but in order to do that, we would need to be able to copy and change hardware, too. If we made the hardware with a 3D printer, then we could use that same solution. But with today's technology, that solution's not available, and I don't have a solution to offer.
You mentioned that this talk had been written up in a paper. Do you have a reference to that?
You can find it in gnu.org/philosophy. And the name has inclusion in it. I don't remember if the name is just inclusion or if there are other words in it too. Oh, it's gnu.org/philosophy, which is the general place to find everything about the philosophical issues of the free software movement.
I understand you have an objection to Ubuntu. Could you explain?
Oh, Ubuntu is one of the distributions of the GNU/Linux operating system. There are more than 1,000 different versions of GNU/Linux in use today, and they're called distributions. Unfortunately, for the free software movement and for users' freedom, most of them are made by people who are not supporters of the free software movement. Most of the people in the free software community, or at least a large fraction, do not agree with the free software movement. And in 1998, the people who disagreed with the ideals of free software coined another term, quote, open source, unquote, as a way to talk about basically the same set of software but bury our ethical position and ideas. And they were pretty successful, but we didn't let them succeed completely. So the free software movement is still here. We still advocate free, freedom-respecting software. But most GNU/Linux distros are made by people who don't share our views. So they add non-free programs. That's the problem with Ubuntu. Ubuntu actually contains non-free programs. But if you look at the set of all the software that Ubuntu steers users towards, that also contains other non-free programs, which are not inside Ubuntu, but Ubuntu offers to install them for you. So this is why I can't endorse Ubuntu. The fact that they call the system Linux and that they talk about open source and don't talk about freedom are further reasons for me to not quite like it, but They are not unethical conduct, they're just things I don't like. Installing non-free software is mistreating the users. Calling the system Linux and giving us no credit is mistreating us. That's not as bad as mistreating all the users, but it's not right. And disagreeing with us, well, they have a right to disagree with us, but I don't like it that much.
And so is there a distribution user?
There are around 10 or so. And you can find the full list in gnu.org/distros.
IPR and employment contracts.
Well, IPR is a meaningless topic. It's vague to the point of being pure confusion, and I'm not willing to treat it as if it meant anything. It talks about a dozen or so unrelated laws. And any attempt to formulate issues in terms of that vague concept is garbage in, garbage out. Those laws are so different that they must be treated separately. And that's the only way I'm willing to talk about them. If you would like to formulate your question more clearly and specifically, then it would be a meaningful question and I could answer it.
I would. I was just trying to think of a way of doing so.
Which law are you talking about?
Well, I'm not specifically talking about an individual law.
You have to be. That's the only meaningful thing to discuss. Like, it could be copyright law. It could be trade secrets. It could be patents.
Let me position it slightly better. If I'm a software engineer, for example, for a company, and they have a very common contract in place that says that any software that you write is owned by them.
So this concerns copyright?
Yes.
Copyright. Okay. You see, there are a dozen or so laws that you were talking about, perhaps without knowing that. I don't remember what they all are either. I've seen lists, I know, but that's how many there are. I only remember some of them. But I don't think you were talking about controlled geographical product names. No. I don't think you were... In fact, that issue doesn't relate to plant variety monopolies either. It doesn't relate to trademarks either, but it does relate to copyright and it could relate to trade secrets. So, basically, I don't think that's fundamentally wrong. However, if the program you're working on developing is proprietary, then you're doing a job that shouldn't be done. So that's where the real ethical issue is. On the other hand, it's a separate issue whether they forbid you to work on other projects on the side that are not related to their work. And decent companies will let you do that. The best time to demand that is when you're negotiating to take the job. Because that's when you have the most clout. Make sure to get that in your employment contract.
Concerning free software, do I have to know how my computer works right down to the bare bones? Or do I have to either...
You don't have to know any more to write free software than you don't have to know to write non-free software.
Yeah.
You can write at any level you like.
Either know that or know how to write software, or to trust you.
I'm sorry, I don't understand your point. I mean, you can write free software at lots of different levels. There are many powerful high-level languages that are implemented in free software. Some very common ones were invented as free software. And so I don't know why you would, there are lots of people who write programs in Perl and Python and PHP, and they don't have to know how the machine works down to the lowest level. Hardly anybody has to know that.
Supposing I were to use GNU, how would I know, if I didn't know, how to look deep into the machine?
Well, if you want to check, you have to know how to check, whatever it is you want to check. Remember, most users don't check any particular thing. The people who check parts of the code are the people who want to, for some specific reason. If you just said you wanted to check every piece of code in the system, you might never get finished because there's just so much of it. But you can check whatever part you're really interested in. However, there are certain parts to check which you would need certain knowledge, so you'd have to learn that. But that's not a requisite for using the system or programming to run on the system. Basically, you don't need to know any more to write programs to run on GNU plus Linux than you need to know to make them run on Microsoft Windows or Mac OS. What we offer you is the option to check other things which may require you to know more.
Kind of following on from that, I was kind of a bit surprised about, I think you used to basically dismiss software as a service. Is that fine?
I say it's wrong.
It's wrong. Okay. So it seems to me that sometimes it might mean there's the user or the consumer's interest to use software as a service.
That depends how you define interest. From my idea of what a person's interest is includes freedom. Obviously, not everyone agrees with me. People are welcome to their own opinions, but I don't give a damn about the consequences of opinions I disagree with.
Sure. But,
I don't cater to those consequences.
Okay. So assuming that the software as a service was free, and I realize this doesn't really satisfy your requirements about making it right, but supposing that software, that supposing the service accepts sort of known inputs, which you don't mind publishing, and produces some kind of output which you're happy to see. Say it's like an image processing program of some kind. Now, I kind of run that on Freedom Box at my home,
yeah.
Which has, I would have the options to use of auditing all that code that runs on the box, or I could accept the fact that I don't know what runs in my remote software service box, but I know
it's not good for users to be using software that they don't have control over.
But if the input they give to the program is not...
First of all, stop looking for excuses to say surveillance is okay. There are so many such excuses, and if we grant them any validity, we're going to be surveilled head to toe. And the other thing is that you can't change that program. Now, you might be happy with the program the way it is. Lots of people get free software and run it the way it is, and they don't change it, but some people do change it. And the point is that if you care badly enough, you can change it, or you could hire someone to change it for you. When it's software as a service, you can't do that.
But what advice would you give to a parent who agrees with the bulk of the free software thesis, but has a six-year-old who loves Angry Birds, who wants a console?
Say no. If you can't say no, well, you need to be able to, or you're going to be a bad parent. And that's true much more generally. This is not the only issue where you need to be able to say no.
It's a very isolated thing to do, though, because it's a peer group.
That may be good, too. If you want your kid not to be yanked around by peer pressure, start preparing him to resist. Get him used to being different from other people.
Less drastic ways, perhaps.
I'm serious about this. I'm sure there are free games that are just as good as Angry Birds. I saw it once. It's utterly lousy. You know, I don't say it's... I mean, even in terms of ignoring the fact that it's not free, just judging it as the game, it's utterly lousy.
But isn't it always just about compromise? You've drawn your line quite distinctive when in the playing field. A lot of us are prepared to sacrifice the knowledge or the information that people are going to gather from us.
I think that's foolish, and the reason is these are fights we can win. And the only reason that a compromise might be necessary or might seem necessary is that so many others are rushing to surrender and not resist. So more of us need to resist, and then we'll get all of what we want.
But that's not why I use software which I know is spying on me. What I do it in the knowledge. I think that's important.
Well, what can I say? I think that you are using foolish criteria, but you have a right to your views. I don't know if there's any more to be said than that.
Someone like my mum isn't going to set up one of these freedom boxes and tea.
You could set it up for her.
I'm going to sit there and set all of these up and maintain all of them and so on.
I don't see why it would require much maintenance.
I really like your idea about rewarding artists on popularity, but I don't understand how you would do that without implementing some sort of
you have to identify yourself.
Or you my suggestion is a system of polling. You can measure statistical phenomena with a sample. You don't need to get information about everyone.
That sounds a bit like spying.
It would be spying if people had to give information.
How do you stop people from falsifying results of such a model?
If people can volunteer to participate, then yes, it would be easy to falsify. But if you pick some people and invite them to participate or not, I don't think it'll be so easy to falsify.
To go back to the argument, like if the information is being gathered anonymously, it doesn't matter because it can't be tracked back to you. So they might know that somebody's visited these four websites.
Well, there's no way they... The websites could count visitors, but they can't... That doesn't really prove anything. It's easy to make a program give a website lots of visits. So I don't think... I'm not proposing you would use that at all. Well, what I want to do at this point is go have dinner.
Okay.
But actually, first... You know, I'll answer one more question, but then, well, okay.
Yeah. You say you want to use proprietary software because it restricts people's freedoms. Why don't you apply the same criteria to hardware?
Because there is no free hardware in that sense.
What do you mean it's free?
Not in the same, quite in the same sense. People can make Arduinos, but you can't change an Arduino into something else. It is what it is. And there's very little that can be done on an Arduino. You can't run an ordinary user operating system on one. They're not designed to be able to do that.
Right, okay, well, thank you very much, Richard. That's been extremely entertaining.